In all the years I've traveled to Scotland, the 7 times I've been to the Edinburgh Festival and the time I went to Scotland on my honeymoon and we went to Edinburgh and Inverness and Aberdeen, I've never spent any quality time in Glasgow. So I was excited to read Russell MacLean's crime novel and When I Die because I thought, oh, well, here's going to be a lovely depiction of Glasgow.
The tourist board loathed me.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 513, Writing Crime Novels. Russell MacLean is a Scottish crime novelist whose new novel, And When I Die, is a fast-paced, character-driven story of an undercover cop who may be in over his head. It's a classic setup, and I wanted to talk to Russell about how he got started as a writer, and he told me about some of what I think are some surprising influences.
How did you get started writing crime fiction? I know that when I write my Reduced Shakespeare Company plays, I'm writing for myself and I'm writing to make myself laugh. That's not, I guess, what a crime novelist does.
It depends. The thing is, I put in what I think are jokes into the books, actually, and nobody else gets them. People say I'm really dark and depressing. There's actually a few puns in some of them, which is always fun. But no, I wrote all this stuff because, well, I wanted to write science fiction for years. I thought I'd be a brilliant science fiction writer, and I wasn't. I was terrible. I was absolutely awful at it. And my dad gave me some crime novels when I was about 19, 20. Must have been. He gave me Mr. Majestic, Elmer Leonard, and Raymond Chandler and things like that. And I just grew to, I thought this was the best way to write about stuff, was because you have this genre where people are doing awful, terrible, nasty things to each other. And that's kind of fun because that gives you a lot of scope to write about different things through the medium of people doing horrible things to each other. Because I think we're at our most interesting when we're being really nasty to each other and really cruel. And that's something I actually learned from you. You mentioned there's your Shakespeare stuff there. When I was growing up, Dad took me to see you guys in Kirkcaldy. And that's where I first learned about what Shakespeare was like. And I realized that he was actually really violent and nasty and horrible himself. So there's a lot of connections back to that. I just like people at their most extreme, and that's what crime fiction does.
And the actors of the Reduced Shakespeare Company are constantly doing horrible things to each other and audiences.
Yes.
that seems what a magnificent legacy we have. Elmore Leonard seems like a fantastic place to start. And I don't read a lot of crime fiction, but my sense is that with Elmore Leonard, he's writing about interesting characters who happen to be criminals.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that's what I loved about And When I Die, a crime novel about an undercover cop who gets in over his head, possibly. It's a classic setup, and I thought it was great. And I thought he was a funny narrator. I thought he had some lovely jokes.
I write the kind of stories I want to write, and it's the, you mentioned Elmer Leonard there, and it's a great example of somebody who writes about just people. And as I said earlier, I was trying to find it, people doing nasty things to each other is to me what crime fiction kind of comes down to, or people who are doing things that kind of transgress what we expect to be normal. So, but for most people, crime fiction is a detective and a crime and a solving and a mystery. All that sort of stuff comes into it. And I find that the least interesting part of it. I don't really care whether a crime is solved or whether we don't know who the murderer is and we find out at the end, all that stuff. What I really care about is how these actions impact the characters. And it's all literally, the one thing I loved reading Elmer Leonard was he'd set up these amazing characters. And it was kind of like watching a game of dominoes. All these characters are those domino things where somebody set one up, ping it over, and they all fell down to create a picture.
Yeah.
If you remember those. And he does that with characters. And that's, to me, what the crime fiction does so well. All these characters impact on each other, and it just spreads out from that. And in particular with And When I Die, the idea of this family and one act kind of completely destroys them and sends them off in these odd directions and exposes, of course, Johnny, undercover cop, brings back Kat, the other narrator, who is the only innocent member of the family who wants away from it. She's forced back to it, and they just all play off each other, leading to this finale of fun.
Finale of fun, a great way to say it. I'm surprised that's not on the cover of the book. Finale of fun.
I tried to get them to put it on. For some reason, they refused.
Well, and the Scobies, the crime family that are the subject of the book, the Scobies are like the Corleones of Glasgow. Right?
They were great. I've got an obsession with families. There's another crime writer, an American. You'll notice, even though I'm Scottish, all my influences seem to come from America. So there's another guy, Ross McDonald, who came after Raymond Chandler.
Okay.
And he was obsessed with bringing a sort of a kind of Freudian element to the detective story. And he wrote about family almost all the time and about dark secrets and skeletons and families. And that's kind of what I seem to keep doing, is I keep coming back to extended families with dark secrets, with horrible long-standing grudges against each other. And I think that's probably because, if I can get psychoanalytical for a second, I'm an only child, so I don't have brothers and sisters or a massive extended family. So I loved watching everyone else's extended family implode, and that's kind of come into my fiction.
That makes a lot of sense. Right, and all your fiction proves that, boy, aren't you lucky to be an only child.
Yeah, absolutely. With a family who quite like each other.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that was one of the pleasures for me of the book, is that I love shifting perspectives in any kind of fiction, novel or film or television. But so you have the dual narrators of John and Kat, and so you see the same events from his point of view and from her point of view. And that's very fun. And there was a line in there where John says, "On paper, I was a pretty shitty copper, but I could make a great wannabe criminal." Is that sort of true of the crime novelist as well?
I would make an awful criminal. In my brain, I would be a brilliant criminal. In reality, I would probably try and rob a bank, trip in a banana peel, and crash into the counter. Kind of, you know, I once learned to play golf years ago, because I'm from Fife, and that's near St Andrews, and of course you have to. And it took me about 5 minutes before I came out with a broken nose, because they asked me to watch what they were doing. So I stood and looked over the guy's shoulder. He swung the club, smashed me in the face, because he didn't know I was there. And that's what I would do if I was a criminal. I would likely try and, you know, bring out a gun and shoot myself in the foot. Yeah. So on paper, I'd probably make a not bad criminal. In reality, I could possibly be a Moriarty type. You know, I could stand in the background and just direct everybody else to do stuff and never get caught. That would be fine.
Right.
Which is what you do as a writer as well. That's what you do. You're sort of manipulating all these characters on the page, and it's great fun because you get to set them up so that they have the worst possible thing. I sound like such a sadist. You get to set them up so they have the worst possible things happen to them. You know? That I love doing. So. But,
Maybe I need to be reading more crime fiction, I guess, is what I've discovered.
Yeah, you should. I mean, this is it's a big, broad thing. And as I was saying earlier, people have this really limited view of it, this limited view of what it can do, of what it's about. And there's a wee bit of snobbery that comes into it. And particularly in Britain, I think, where we are obsessed with the police procedural and, you know, the cop who finds everything out and all the rest of it. And it's so much bigger than that. And there's so many writers, I think, who I used to make the argument that Irvin Welsh, Trainspotting, was actually a crime fiction book to a certain degree, because it is about people doing these transgressive acts and committing these transgressive acts and suffering the consequences. And they're breaking the law. And you've got, of course, Begbie, who is a great, you know, crime fiction character, and that he's the hard man and the horrible, violent type. And, you know, so you've got all that. So I think it becomes a bigger genre. The more you look at it, the more you can bring stuff in. And I think it's shown more. We've got the Man Booker Prize, of course, which gives out for literary fiction. And in the last 2 years, crime fiction novels have been strong contenders. One of them won last year. Marlon James has won. And this year, my stablemate at the publisher Saraband, Graham McRae Burnett, has made it onto the shortlist with a brilliant crime novel. Everybody is trying to say is literary, but it's crime. There's no question.
Well, yes, you're right. People have preconceived notions about anything that can be pinned to a genre. Whether it's science fiction or crime or fantasy or whatever it is. And as you say, you know, Macbeth might have been the original crime fiction. You know,
absolutely.
Shakespeare himself, a great crime fiction writer.
Yeah, I mean, Hamlet is, of course, a crime novel. He's the kind of crime novel I love writ large. Look at a family with an interloper coming in with the incest stuff, or allegedly, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a crime novel writ within a you know, that royal framework and stuff. It's all of that's there. Which is the one with where they chop up the people and serve them to Titus Andronicus, I think, stuff like that.
Yep.
There's elements all in there of what I think could come from brilliant crime novels. The comedies were just crimes, but you know, that's fine.
crimes on humanity.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Right.
I did try and watch a few of them.
yeah.
I don't think I get to laugh.
No, the comedies are pretty tragic, actually.
I'm Alexandra Sokolov, author of The Huntress FBI Thrillers, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our fall of 2016 tour of the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged continues across 17 states this week, including performances in Washington, New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia, South Carolina, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Florida. We'll also be touring the ultimate Christmas show Abridged in the U.S. between Thanksgiving and Christmas, with performances in Ohio, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Colorado, and Maryland. And in November and December, we'll be touring the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, revised in China for 3 weeks. Plus, in February 2017, we'll begin a four-month UK tour of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. We'll have more information about all of our overseas tours later this fall. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with novelist Russell McLean.
I'm fascinated by the notion that you wanted to be a sci-fi writer and you couldn't be. So that implies that the nerd is strong in you.
Oh, very much, yes.
And why do you think you weren't able to kind of go in that direction?
I think there's one of the things that with science fiction you have to really craft this very different world and create it in such a very strong way. There's an element of world building that can come into it, and some people like Philip K. Dick could create worlds that were created within just a few words. You know, he didn't have to tell you much, and yet somehow you got the sense of it. And others would create these massive, big, long things. I just never created something that felt real, and that was the big problem for me. I think I was more obsessed with literally the inner workings of the characters and how they got to places. So I would kind of fudge the science element a lot and kind of get lost in that. I think also it was just timing a lot of cases as well. I had a great one where I was 20 and I was a student, and I was sending out the science fiction novel I thought was wonderful. And it went to an agent who said, no, it was a publisher who said, "I really like this. It's not for me. Send it to these five other guys who I think will be interested." So I sent it to five other guys, all of whom wrote back and said, "We quite like it, but it's not for us. Send it to somebody else." And this goes on for about 20 or 30 letters of people recommending me until I got five letters to the post one day saying, "Not for us, but send it to," and it's the guy I originally sent it to. It got around in this massive circle.
Right.
And I was just kind of thinking, I'm obviously doing something right, but also something wrong, and I couldn't work out what it was. And I think it's because I don't think the science fiction elements were strong enough.
Right.
And I think as well, looking back in it, I was stealing a lot of stuff of the elements I was using from things that I loved. So they were probably thinking, "We really like the character, we really like this, but basically the plot's a ripoff of Doctor Who or Star Trek or something."
Right.
Certainly looking back at it now, that's what I'm thinking. And so I'd love to go back to it one day, but I don't know if I've kind of found my niche or something. I'm still... The one thing I would still love to do, because the first thing I ever sent away was a Doctor Who novel to Virgin Publishing, who used to do these original novels based on the show. And that got a really nice rejection in that it came back and said, "We quite enjoyed it. We might have thought about taking it further, but we've just lost the license."
Oh! So, So timing, you're right, timing.
Yeah, timing is everything. Like in theatre, but even, you know, worse. With writing, timing is everything. In fact, the Virgin thing was just a mess of embarrassments for me because there was that happen. But even before I sent to them, this is me going on a sidetrack, but that was during the days when we didn't have the internet in the home right. or in hotels or anything, not even bad internet. This was, and I had to go to an internet cafe to find things online. And I'd found out that Virgin were doing this through stuff online. And I went to this internet cafe in Edinburgh. And I thought, I can't remember what the guidelines were. So just before I send it, I'll look them up again. And I couldn't remember the address for Virgin or the thing. So this was whatever the search engine was used at the time in a public cafe in the middle of Edinburgh. I was about 16 at this point, I think. I must have been. In a public cafe in the middle of Edinburgh, I typed in the search engine, Virgin submission.
Oh, dear.
It was an educational day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I actually had to explain to them why this stuff was coming up on the terminal.
Oh dear!
It was one. No, I'm looking for, you know, Dr. Houston. Honestly, I know I'm a teenager on the internet, but it's true.
Get out of here, nerd!
That place is long closed down, but I can't walk past the building it was in without cringing.
Well, that's an interesting. It's an interesting. Point about, you know, in science fiction has the benefit of if you don't know how something works, you just make it up. But yeah. if you're writing a crime novel, you kind of have to research. I mean, this book talks about, you know, guns and explosives and I would imagine, you know, searching that stuff online could also lead to an interesting conversation with Homeland Security, right?
I'm always worried when I go back to the States because I go back to do writers' conventions and stuff, and well, just over in New Orleans for BoucherCon this year, and I always just have this slight worry at the back of my head: has anybody been watching, you know, the kind of weird stuff that's coming in there? And yeah, I have looked up how do you make a car bomb, you know, at home. That's without giving much away because that's what opens the book, is of course a homemade car bomb and stuff, and what kind of effect would this have? And but you do start to go down rabbit holes. And the thing with this book is there's a character, Ray, who doesn't feel pain. He has a condition called congenital insensitivity to pain. And that was the problem I had with this book for a long time, was getting off the ground and running and trying to work out how he could survive a car bomb and still kind of come back and take revenge on everybody. And that's what led me down this rabbit hole to discover this real life thing, congenital insensitivity to pain, that was an actual disease. And then I had to research that. And so you do start to find that things connect. And that's the beauty of the internet, is you stumble across stuff by accident all the time. Some of it really weird, especially if you type in Virgin submission.
Exactly. And Ray is a fantastic character, and you find, and strangely sympathetic, even though he's one of the bad guys. I mean, that's kudos to you. I mean, the aspect of performance, you know, there's a line where John says, maybe it was the cocaine talking, but I said this, and I thought at the time, or maybe you're just a really good method actor and you're totally in character and you're improvising in character. I mean, there does seem to be that element of any undercover cop who's has to assume a personality, and a little bit a writer has to assume the personalities of the characters he's writing for, right?
Well, I mean, I wanted to act. That was what I originally wanted to do. Anyway, I wanted to be an actor, and I sort of applied to drama school and stuff like that. The problem I eventually found was I didn't like many would-be actors. Yeah. It's a terrible thing to say to somebody who's, you know, in the profession.
I totally hear you. Well, this was, but reading In When I Die was a great introduction to your work. And so now I want to pick up more books by you. But I did have a question about the title. Is it really taken from the Blood, Sweat and Tears song?
Yeah, not Blood, Sweat and Tears, but it was. That was the one I heard that I loved, yeah. It was Laura Nyro, I think, who originally did it.
Oh,
who originally
wrote it.
And then Blood, Sweat and Tears is the one I first remember hearing, but the one I actually took it from was Queen Esther Marrow, who, because all of the thing was slightly influenced by blaxploitation this is in the middle of you know, Peely Wally Glasgow. Blaxploitation songs were the big influence, which is bizarre, but it kind of, that's what brought it together for me, was that whole soundtrack, and kind of gave me the rhythm to write with, which is very, very strange. With things like Gil Scott-Heron, who of course has a connection to Glasgow. His dad played for Celtic, if I remember correctly, which is one of these weird things. So yeah, it was that the music was very important to me in sort of pulling it together. But yeah, it was the blood, sweat, and tears, and my dad's record collection has now descended to me, basically.
That's great. There's so many influences in air quotes, a Glasgow set crime novel. It was great. Congratulations, and what is next?
What is next? Crying. Miserably. No, I have finished the next book, because it's the first that I set myself foolish challenges all the time. So the McNee books, which were set in Dundee, were always going to be five books about this detective, and he'd have a resolution of his story by the end. With these books, it's three books. I've decided it's a trilogy of books set in Glasgow, all with very strong women at the heart of them. So with this one, I split it half and half between John and Kat. So Kat was obviously my first attempt at writing a fully female point of view. In the next one, I've gone full woman, which is mad, with the story of a woman who has the world's worst boyfriend. And he does some terrible, terrible things. So she gets rid of him and then accidentally kills him and has to cover up the body, in the process becoming the most dangerous woman in Scotland.
I'm in.
It's, yeah, nice and violent. It's been getting a good response from people pre-publication so far. So that's out next year at some point.
Oh, cool. Will you talk to me again about that when it comes out?
I will 1,000% be back to talk to you, yes.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your surprising influences via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. And you can follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, hooker with a heart of gold Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Geezer McVee. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Alex Sokoloff, who in a roundabout way introduced me to Russell in the first place. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 1539ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
You've listened to the podcast, you know I'll talk to anybody, but still.
And I'll do any podcast, so it's fine.
We're an excellent match.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.